a treat. Yo, Parish Orphans and Retrogrades, happy Friday morning. We're hitting you with some Gregorian chant. This is Exsurge Domine. Seamask style. Today with me are my friends, Will Noland from Nolan Knows and Mike Pantile. And it's a beautiful morning to talk about what's been going on in the news. First off, how are you guys doing? It's great to see you as always.
Doing super well, man. Will, I actually can't hear you.
Yeah, Will, you're muted up on the mic.
Little technical difficulties this Friday morning. It's okay. We're just a couple of boomer dads out here.
You see, I'm going to try to unmute him. What's up, Mike? Can you to tell me if you can hear him, Mike? And in the meanwhile, I'll just say this much.
Can you hear me now?
Got it. You're good.
There it is.
Awesome. Bingo.
Well, I
was just saying every day is a good day for Seamask, Tim. It's always beautiful on Seamask mornings.
Agree.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Totally agree.
Speaking of which, we have a new channel for Seamask, specifically dedicated to Seamask programming, Christian masculinism. Go there. It's the Seamask or Christian Masculinism podcast at YouTube. So we don't have to rotate channels the way we do. Mr. Stumphauser isn't with us today. He's currently moving to Hattiesburg. We have some projects to do. So he's going to be in Hattiesburg renting a house for the next year. He's on his way here and he couldn't make today's show. So I just thought instead of throwing this on the Seamask channel, which all of you should go and subscribe to, come watch it here because we can do it live. Also, please subscribe, Parish Orphans and Retrogrades, to this channel. We are oh so close, within 40 subscribers of the 50,000 mark. And we've been waiting for like 2 months to do the 50,000 subscriber show. What I found, Nick and Will, is that human beings are trolls. As we got close to 50,000, people started unsubscribing.
Of course they
just
did.
Because I have haters. I guess this happens to Mr. Beast all the time. Can you believe that? People actually expend the effort to subscribe to this channel who hate, and then they can unsubscribe at opportune moments. What is up with that?
I'm not surprised, man. It's petty. It's effeminate.
Yeah, surprisingly, though. It's like almost impressively petty. It takes precalculation. My favorite shows are like, you know, I watch you guys, I watch Michael Knowles, I watch my friend, quite frankly, and that's, you know, I'll tune in once every 2 weeks to see what you're doing for shows. I would never in a million years think to subscribe to someone I don't like, and I'd never in a million years keep tabs on them, such as to be that petty. It's almost impressive. Nevertheless, people should, in addition to subscribing to the Seamask channel, subscribe and like and click the notification bell to this very video. What's been in the news? I want to go to Will first on this because we've you know, ride or die. Both of us have been committed to the patriarchy worldview for years now, and have taken shrapnel in the front end of the car because of our views on patriarchy. Well, I confess this: it's hard to see. In some ways, it's hard to see the patriarchy worldview blowing up, and probably part of that's just ego and pettiness on my end. That's always the nature of concupiscent man. But more important than any of the pettiness, the reason it's hard now that patriarchy, feminism, red pill is largely in the news, looming over so many different stories and angles that popular outfits are choosing to take. It's most difficult to watch it play out because there are some good guys. Knowles is always insightful. But we're kind of watching most of the people that are covering the red pill versus feminism debate fumble it, aren't we?
Yeah, for sure. And that's the sad thing. When you watch the truth being fumbled and it's being put across in a way that isn't as convincing or as powerful or as articulate as it could be done, then you know that you're losing some of the listeners. They're thinking that patriarchy has put its best foot forward, whereas really it's been toned down. And if they think that this is the best that patriarchy has to offer, it might actually convince some of them to say, you know what, I do agree with the red pill, and that's where I'm going instead. Or it might just be that they look at the people are this simple. They just look at the guy making the arguments and think, huh, I wonder if he goes to the gym. Yeah. Oh, he doesn't. He looks soft. I'm not going to listen to anything he says. That's how human beings work, like it or not. And Tim, you gave an example of that with people unsubscribing from the channel just to spite you. People are rational animals. That's our nature as human beings. But there's a lot more that goes into decision-making than just rationality.
Yeah, all kinds of angles inform decision-making. And when folks look at the red pill, Mike, they think, okay, these guys, most of them work out, probably all of them work out. The crew that is being pitched as the foil to the red pill is something they call the tradcons. I don't know who came up with this term, but usually whom they're discussing is actually like Christian feminists or conservative feminists. A lot of times, even the red pill guys invited women to do the debate with them that Mike, you and I were supposed to be a part of. I was actually texting Tucker Carlson about that last night, see if he wanted to had any interest in hosting the debate, because they want clout, these red pill guys, and they pass on the debate because they wanted the bigger game. It turns out the bigger game that they wanted, most of the Daily Wire hosts, besides the Catholics, represent not our position, not patriarchy. I think Knowles would do that well, maybe Walsh, but they represent a third position, the tradcons, which are really feminist conservatives or feminist Christians. This is another thing that makes the debate hard to watch, as it's on the marquee.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that at all. I mean, it's very telling that they want women to debate with regards to like men's issues in marriage, where they're married to purse holding men. I've said this before and I'll say it again. And they don't care about an honest debate, because debating guys like me, you, Foster, Nolan, Chase, they have everything to lose, because we're a bunch of relatively, you know, quote unquote, no name guys. And we go in there and we're legitimate patriarchs, other than our man Chase, of course. And like their argument crumbles on itself. So I don't really have much to say on that. It's disappointing, but it's unsurprising considering these people's worldview. But also to Nolan's point, man, like, you're absolutely right. I risk sounding like a meathead, because that's my whole life has been, I've owned a gym. I've been in the gym for over 10 years. It's like, that's what kind of got me here in the first place. It was a tool that really God used to really propel my life. But you're absolutely right to really get the attention of this younger generation. You've got to look the part. Nobody cares about your theology degree if you can't bench press your wife. Because if you can't bench press your wife, right, Nolan, you're the wife. And so you're not making a convincing argument. You could talk about patriarchy and everything you're saying could be biblically sound and make a lot of sense. But if they look at you and you're a Ned Flanders, effeminate man boob, having man, I mean, how are you really going to be taken seriously?
Yep. If you look at Justin Waller, you look at Tate's brother as well. Young guys just see guys who are in shape, disciplined enough to make big money, and they're charismatic and confident. And they get a lot of the natural virtues right. They get some important stuff wrong too, but it's enough. The stuff they get right is enough to make them stand out in a world of male weakness. And people think, I want to be like that guy.
Yep. The problem with a three-party system, I'm thinking about this as a general election year, Mike, and Will, here in America, people think in binaries. Truth seems to operate in binaries, like yes or no, instead of in terms of contraries. You know, opposites are two. Contraries, as Aristotle says, are more than one. Like, there's only one way to hit the bullseye. There are a million, million ways to miss the bullseye. That's contraries. We say that the red pill, and of course, right feminism, which is really what these trad cons are, or left feminism, the originary feminists, these are three positions that all miss the mark, and Christian masculinity is contrary to all of them. It's not that difficult, and yet it's difficult enough, for nuanced enough, for people to miss it at the level of popular discourse.
Oh yeah.
And so today what I'm going to do is play you guys some clips of this stuff around Valentine's Day leaking into the news. And I'm playing each clip for a different purpose, but the main purpose is, for all of them, is to get you guys responding to them. I get paranoid sometimes. I fear, is our position over-nuanced? How in the hell can it be? It's Christianity. It's a bimodal patriarchy. There's a clerical patriarchy. Jesus established, with the apostles as bishops and the lower apostles as presbyters. And there's a lower patriarchy established at the level of every household that St. Paul talks a lot about after the Gospels in the epistles. So two patriarchies comprise Christianity. There's no other defense of patriarchy in the world outside of Christianity. Specifically, it's really specific to Catholicism, the only worldview that doesn't have any divorce, which is ostensibly the big issue that the red pill concerns itself with. And I sit there and I think, okay, conservative feminism, liberal feminism, the red pill, which is mainly comprised of Muslims and Jewish people, how do they claim to have any purport here? That even the Protestants, we'll take them on our side. I'm an ecumenist in that way, but there's only one worldview that rejects divorce at all. How did we get dealt out of this poker table? That's what I keep asking. Does someone want to take a shot at that? And then I'll start running these clips.
You know that film Warrior with Tom Hardy in, when he's the no-name guy in the MMA gym watching the pro one fight, and he just says, I'll fight him for you to keep him warm. And then they let him in, and he just brutalizes him, slams him, knocks him out. The mm-hmm. problem is that if you let a guy like Tim into a debate with big names, that's what's going to happen, and they don't want it to happen. You're not allowed the attention that would come from actually stepping into that particular ring. So I still think it's a case of containment, where a bit of the pressure that's building in people's attraction to patriarchy is being let off, but it's still patriarchy light.
That's an interesting point, Will. So what you're going to hear here is Daily Wire backstage. This was within 12 hours of Valentine's Day, the 12 hours before. It might have been on the 13th. I found it on the 15th. But it's funny you should say that, because in the person of Michael Knowles, who's a friend of mine, lots of your points that you've made since your classroom days when you got fired for being a patriarch and teaching patriarchy are being made. You're going to hear them made eloquently. Lots of my points are being made. They're not all the exact same way we would make them. But in the person of Michael Knowles, on an outfit like Daily Wire, which is not, you know, not our perspective broadly, but Knowles brings it to bear. So listen to what he says, and then think about the point you just made. Well, it's like, wow, with Knowles, it's almost like Will Noland making it. Knowles. It's all other times it's almost me making the point. And he did endorse the case for patriarchy and read the case for patriarchy. And he's been a very, very good friend. And he's on record as saying something like, of course I'll blurb Gordon's book. I blurb a shopping list of Gordon's, which is very cool. And he's listed me one of his favorite publishing authors that are currently alive. So I really appreciate the guy. And he does an exemplary job of representing what we're saying. I still think there's more that you and I could add to the convo, but I mean, and Mike and Nick and Chase as well. But listen to the way the conversation goes. I sped it up a little bit so we could get bigger chunks. Listen to this. Both of you respond.
marriage. Like, this is the big.
This is Jeremy Boring.
The conversations we ever had on this panel was about marriage. One of the ones that I got the most positive feedback about from people who felt like it really edified them. But there's a real move on parts of the right to oppose marriage now. It's run by the ostensible red pill crowd, which, you know, it's interesting how the meaning of red pill has evolved over the last 5 years to essentially now mean anti, I would say anti-woman. They would say pro-man, but I think it's far beyond pro-man. I think it's decidedly anti-woman in many ways. And you see people who, I think some of them are bad actors who are peddling with, and you also see people like Pearly Things who, I don't know Pearl, I don't know if she's a bad actor or not. I kind of get the sense that maybe she's just a naive person being kind of dragged along out of half desire to be famous and half probably hasn't read a book. And half of that I can relate to. On the other half, you can also relate. But I do think it's an interesting question that is harder to talk about in one-on-one settings. It might be a bit this format. Just to talk about what is the role of men and women, what is the role of marriage in a society that has essentially turned its back on the concept of marriage, that is legally encoded anti-man policies in our legal code.
They've abolished difference.
The distinction itself.
Yeah. You know, I just went on the Whatever podcast.
Yeah.
Hold on. Before Knowles gets started, I just want to do a thing here, and I want to let you guys respond to anything that Jeremy Boring said. I probably agree. You know, I take disagreement with most points, with more of his points than anyone else who says anything in the clips that I've brought across. I don't think the red pill is anti-woman. I don't think any of us here think it is. I think it's a Jewish and red, a Jewish and Muslim approach to what ought to be Christian family. That's different from being anti-woman. So let me say this, and I have to be careful how I put it. Nick and I were very, very, very close in working one of our major projects, very close with the Daily Wire. And so there's been a lot of idea sharing. That's all I'm going to say. I don't want to say too much. I don't want to say too little, though. So like when people hear, oh, Boring and others are intoning a lot of our points, like they've had very close look behind the scenes at our work, and we've communicated with them, and they were interested in traveling this direction anyway. But this is, of course, not this isn't Jeremy Boring's not making any points that are too adjacent to anything we're saying here. Will or Nick, did you want to jump in, or is the red pill anti-woman?
No, I don't think he is. I think he makes specific claims about what female nature is that the red pill tends to use to rationalize fornication, and ends up just being black pill about marriage, practically speaking. So I think it's a specific vision of what a woman is and what her proclivities are, rather than being anti-woman.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't think there's an anti-woman. It depends on who you listen to, because it's funny because like the manosphere, whatever, is so splintered, where all these guys kind of have a slightly different version and they're all at odds with each other, which obviously, you know, when a movement is based off of nothing but self-worship, of course, you're going to get that splintering. But it's not anti-woman so much as it is, black pill for marriage, but also it's anti-marriage, anti-relationship, and pro-degeneracy, pro-fornication. That's essentially what it is. It's just, okay, here's a... you know, purely biological stance on female, male sexual nature. Here's how you exploit it. This is why marriage is bad. So just rack up your body count, focus on you, go to the gym, bro. And that's it. It's anti-patriarchy in a way too, right? Cause it's anti-family.
Yes. And see, that's, I don't want to say too much, but there's a lot of cross-pollination here. Pollination, at least one way. And this is what I meant by over-nuanced. Like, you and me and Nick and some of our friends, including Chase, are trying to nuance the red pill and say, don't do this, do this. Don't eat that, eat that. But it turns out the red pill actors are basically bad faith clout chasers, and they're not making honest mistakes. But the mistake they're not making, one mistake they're not making, is being anti-woman. The way Jeremy Boring just said here, he's like, I think that's the most positive thing. What do you guys say? And then I'll go on with the clip about Pearly Things. It's just, started out taking women off their pedestal, the kind of gyno worship in society. It was just amazing to hear a woman out there. I mean, Steph does this, but she didn't have as wide a platform. Just taking women down a peg. That's not anti-woman. It's just saying, look, for 50 or 60 or 100 years, everyone's just had the feminine genius on their lips. It's really annoying. Like, women are second in rank and everyone's been worshiping them like the elves in Lord of the Rings. It's annoying. And I think the anti-woman dimension of Pearly Things has been much better than, say, the anti-marriage dimension in that are message transmuted into. What do you guys say?
Well, real quick, I think if they're really going to be honest about this argument, and I would never defend Rolo or any of these guys.
Yeah.
They always just reference her when speaking about the red pill. If they were being honest about it, they would address all of these characters. I don't know why they're avoiding addressing Rolo and all these other people. Pearl to me is not like red pill when I think about the red pill.
No.
I don't think about her. You're right. Her message went from, okay, let's take women off the pedestal, which I can agree with, to now it's just clickbait, engagement farming, nonsense, blackpilling men into the stratosphere. And so, and honestly, like one of my buddies said this pretty funny. I think Tim, you're, and Will, you guys are in the war council on Twitter. Elijah Seraphim, shout out to you. He quoted the 3-6 Mafia song. And this is why I think this conversation is so almost past a certain point useless. You can't save her. She doesn't want to be saved. And that's, you can say that to sort of like the movement, the red pill movement as a whole, you know, that's why it's utter nonsense. It's debased.
Agreed. But yeah, I agree with everything you just said. I just am I get very uncomfortable when people are taking what sounds like our kind of golden mean Aristotelian position between red pill and feminists, but it's a false version of that. And that's kind of what happened with Jeremy Boring here, whether he meant to or not. I'm like, no. We like a lot. We like 95% of the red pill's critiques, but it's their remedies that are really, really wrong. He says that at some point. And then he's like, well, okay, but their critiques of women go too far. I'm like, no, the critiques of women are perfectly fine.
Yeah.
That's not the problem. It's the remedies and the anti-marriage stuff. Okay, let me go on here.
Things who, I don't know Pearl. I don't know if she's a bad actor.
Back up a little.
Sense that maybe she's just a naive person being kind of dragged along out of half desire to be famous and half probably hasn't read a book. And half of that I can relate to. But the other half, you can also relate to. But I do think it's this interesting question that is harder to talk about in one-on-one settings. It might be a fit this format. Just to talk about, what is the role of men and women? What is the role of marriage in a society that has essentially turned its back on the concept of marriage, that is legally encoded anti-man policies in our legal code?
I think it's now my like 28th hour on this show.
That was 6 hours
after a 3-hour debate on the show. So I
did a separate thing.
Yeah, I did 9 hours.
9 hours.
Great. Yeah, well, and it was
worth half.
It was great. It was great. I really loved that show. I love it. Because almost every question. When I did it the first time.
Pay me $1 million.
No, I love it because these poor girls, man. The whole thing with that show, which is why it's so funny, is you get.
Hold on,
I'll pay you $10,000.
Really gonna do it.
The thing with that show that makes it very funny is the guys go on and they make fun of these girls who have OnlyFans who are like 18 and don't know anything, and then the guys completely destroy them, and then the girls look like dummies, and then the clip goes viral. And I felt it would be wrong to do that. I felt I might get a lot of views, but I might also burn in hell for eternity. And I thought about it for a moment. And I said, no, okay, I won't do it. And so I went on, and I said the rule, never give the audience what they want. Exactly. Never. Like, I went on a great course about the Treaty of Augsburg. So I go on there, and I just felt it's not these girls' fault. All of them have some weird family situation. None of them, we live in a culture that teaches them a ton of lies. They have no education. Even if they went to good schools, they have no education. So I felt, okay, let's just talk about what's really going on here. And they're victims of feminism, and the red pill guys are victims of feminism. The irony about the red pill guys, I sympathize with them in a lot of ways. The family courts are totally stacked against dudes. The culture promotes divorce and abolish the definition of marriage and blah, blah, blah. But the red pill guys are feminists. Their sense of men and women is basically, it's just that men and women are...
Okay, I'll pause there. Will, he's making points that I've heard you make for years. The red pill guys are feminist. And yes, we've folks like us have been talking about red pill versus feminism long before Pearly Things had a channel. But Knowles is, as usual, Knowles is really on the exact right track here, and he intones it very well, and he does it fast, and it doesn't sound overly nuanced. It's interesting to hear a point like this being made on the big stage, isn't it? Well,
yeah, good. I hope it gets made louder on bigger stages because everyone needs to hear it. And it's the direction the debate needs to go in. But I think it was last year, roughly, when we saw that the discussions on these bigger platforms are just playing catch up to the case for patriarchy and what we've been talking about on the CMask podcast for a while now. It's not surprising. It's inevitable, because when you understand the issues properly and get them out in the open, that's what you're left with. So it will continue in this direction, I'm sure. But I'll be surprised if we actually get Tim Gordon rather than Knowles on those platforms.
Yeah, you always say it so well. Playing catch up. That's what it is. It's like on the big platform, they're playing catch up. The best people there who intone it really well at the level that they've digested this, you know, basically the big thesis of the case for patriarchy is that dysphoria now in its proper form that everyone recognizes, which is, you know, the T in LMNOT, is actually not nearly as thorough a kind of dysphoria as originary gender dysphoria, which is feminism. And Knowles is great about making that point, because he understands the ideas. He likes to look at something's ideological inception. You know, it's ideological and etiological inception. He understands historiography, and he gets it out really clean and really crisp. But, and same thing with the Red Pills feminist. That's classic Will Noland. Great. But one can't help but feel that, boy, okay, the rest of the case for patriarchy needs to be made there. The rest of Will Noland's points need to be made there. And I simply and straightforwardly, especially because of me and Nick in particular, our behind-the-scenes relationship with Daily Wire, I don't know how to be forward-facing with this. And there have been times where we're very, very, very close to working together very, very intimately. We'll explain more of that in coming days. If we get to this 50,000 subscriber show, we'll probably talk about that a little bit more openly. And then we, Mike, you and I invited Knowles to join us with Chase if we ended up debating, you know, the Red Pill guys in Miami, which was supposed to happen, and now they've kind of passed on that. So we want to work with them really directly, but it's just, you know, it's the engine behind these ideas for years. Now that they're getting pushed onto bigger stages, maybe it feels like a songwriter having Billy Joel or some big rock act playing your songs or something like that. Does that make sense? And you're like, oh no, you're playing the solo wrong, slightly wrong.
And not just rewriting the song or making the solo wrong, just making it a little bit more palatable and mainstream. And I think that's the thing. And this is my issue with the Daily Wire and a lot of these guys, which I really, really like. I like Michael Knowles. I like Matt Walsh.
Me too.
But it's not explicitly patriarchal, because it's not a popular message. It's like, you know, you go to church and you hear 80% of the good message, but 20% they leave out because it could potentially offend women or alienate the female audience, so they don't get their tithe. And so I kind of see that in a similar way, right? With the Daily Wire, they want to talk to tradcons because it's, you know, it's more easily palatable. And also too, patriarchy is never going to be a popular message, no matter how true it is. And so they're espousing a lot of the same things that you talk about, Tim, and Will, I know you've been talking about it for years, but it's never the full picture. And I kind of often wonder why. Well, I mean, it's not popular, and it's not popular for a good reason, because the world just doesn't like the truth in its full, unadulterated, unwatered down sort of way. What do you guys think about that?
Well, imagine waiting years upon years upon years for your message to get out. And you're like, I know this is speaking truth to power, and I know Lucifer's the prince of this world, and his final assault, Sister Lucy at Fatima tells us, is going to be on the family. So I'm going to write the book. I'm going to write it. And if it only sells, you know, 500 copies, fine. I wrote Case for Patriarchy, sold many, many more copies than that. Steph wrote her book, Ask Your Husband, sold many, many more copies than even the Case for Patriarchy. Great. You know, if it sells 5,000 copies, then even big publishers are happy. They start making money at 5,000 copies of a book. Cool. We hit those numbers easy. but it still didn't go large. Once you finally, then there's like this pearly things phenomenon happened spring, early summer of last year. And it started dragging all these big names into the debate. And if there's a big name that's going to be dragged into the debate that makes me happy, it's Michael Knowles. Because he's Catholic. He's an understanding Catholic. We've attended the TLM together. He gets it. And he really does try to make sure to be crisp and clean and not cut off the edges. But waiting for that to happen and it eventuating, if Aragorn is made king and Sauron is defeated and everything you hope happens, comes to pass, like Elrond tells his daughter, it still won't be exactly what you want. And it's not because of Knowles, but the big outfits simply say, they told me and Nick this explicitly. Okay, we can't make all these points. So if people think that what Mike said or what Will just said is a cope now, we were told this very explicitly on Near Projects. We can't make all these points. We want to make as many of them as we can. A lot of people in the company do want to make all of them. Knowles is one of them. A lot of the good people in the brass do. In a lot of these companies, not just Daily Wire, but I have friends that are high up in the brass, and they're like, I want to make them, but it's very hard with big outfits, which everyone wants to go do a debate with a big outfit or be interviewed by a big outfit. They're always controlled by some opposition force. So I start thinking, can we ever just get the true Christian message out there? The answer we've been told very explicitly is no. The closest they can do is 80-20. How am I not supposed to get blackpilled by that, either of you guys?
It's not that they're controlled by opposition forces. It's the outfits like the Daily Wire just are themselves controlled opposition. I don't know if that makes sense what I'm saying, but they are part of the same framing of the debate. The people there, the opposition they're against, and also Daily Wire and others themselves, they're both just tools which set the acceptable language, the acceptable range of points that can be made. And a lot of it is about just bread and circuses, I think. And it's the points that you're not allowed to make, which are actually the most important ones. And that's why it's frustrating, because I'll tell you exactly where this patriarchy light debate would go. It would just go to something like, yeah, family's important and mutual submission, roughly speaking. That's where it would go. Like, we believe in marriage because it's got all kinds of health benefits. It's good for depression and anxiety for both spouses, and it means that children have better life outcomes, and both spouses need to respect each other and mutual submission. And then they don't want a guy like you coming along and arguing against mutual submission.
Yeah, that's very well said, Will. And I just think it's one of those cases where the truth is not popular, but we got to stay in the fight and do what we're doing, even though our channels, our platforms are smaller than theirs. The people that listen really listen very closely to us. And so, you know, I was bummed to hear about this debate, you know, not happening, but I know when the Lord is willing, the opportunity will arise. And so I think we are a significant weapon in the fight. We don't have a large platform like that, but the day will come where people are going to be searching for the truth, because just like Will said, yeah, it's going to be patriarchy light, but it's going to be like this faggy version of it. Yeah. Men should lead. Servant leadership, like Christ loved the church. You're like, oh, okay. Yeah. Oh yeah. We're not going all the way with it, are we? We're not really talking about what St. Paul said in Ephesians, are we?
Well, I'll tell you exactly what you're not allowed to say. And it's not speculation, because this is what was handed on to us. We've had some very near misses with getting these ideas on the biggest marquee. And it's what pissed every publishing Catholic woman off at Steph's book was the conjugal debt. They cannot deal with the conjugal debt. Wives cannot say no to their husbands ever. It's pain of mortal sin. Wives need to try as hard as they can to be thin, and men need to try as hard as they can to be strong, but really, really hard. Wives have to submit unilaterally to their husband. That's just the Bible. These are pure Christian teaching. And we've been told very explicitly that this is too far. These corners have to be shaven off in order to shoot our shot. I mean, and again, I'll articulate, I'll enumerate exactly what this is in coming days. But you get tempted and your appetite gets whetted when you hear someone as good as Knowles do his best at 99%. Listen to the point he continued to make.
But the red pill guys are feminists. Their sense of men and women is basically, it's just that men and women are interchangeable.
Yes.
And go around, screw around, you owe nothing to women. If it's good for women, it's good for men. And that's just a lie. You know, the fundamental unit of society is actually not the individual.
Right.
I love individual rights. It's good to be an individual. The fundamental unit of society is the family. It's men and women together
so
who have a love that becomes so real that you make more people.
Well, to have an atom, you have to have a proton and an electron, right? So It's like a man is a proton. Like, very important.
Here's Jeremy Boring.
You need to have an Adam. You need to have an Eve. That's where I thought he was going.
I thought he was going to go for the Steve thing. And
yeah. Before I got Steve.
I've always
two protons that Adam does not make. I dare say.
Okay, so Walt, do you know what I mean? Well, where it's like he's making your point, and he does such a apt, great job of it that you're like, oh, this is it. You're always getting toward 100% of the point being made and made very well. When Knowles is pushing this issue here, I mean, it's not all of the points we made, but your hopes are getting rekindled when you hear Knowles talking. What do you hear when you hear him saying that before Walt starts making some decent points too?
Well, first off, it's not even my point. He's just explaining what the catechism teaches, that the family is the fundamental social cell and the individual isn't the main building block of society. So he's doing a great job getting across basic Catholic social teaching. Where I detect a bit of pussyfooting is in him saying that men and women being interchangeable is the way in which the red pill is feminist. Now, the red pill doesn't actually say that men and women are interchangeable. They do believe that there are male duties and female duties, and there's a man's role, there's a woman's role. They do talk about submission. So he's dodging what the red pill actually claims there. And he's also dodged the point about contraception, which I've made a couple of times. How are they feminist practically, despite what they claim to believe? Unmarried sex, so fornication, and contraception. Now, if you start talking about contraception as one of the big foundation stones of feminism and the sexual revolution, then you're going to get people upset because lots of people, women especially, like to use contraception despite being married because they don't want to be open to life and they don't want to submit in that way because some of them are trying to cling to careers still while also being mothers and wives. Now, that's the point, which is a bit like the marital debt thing you're told you're not allowed to say. Gets people's backs up.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it. Contraception. Well, we need a near Catholic audience. How do we say that to people that allow contraception? Well, yeah, I get it. But this is why all the world needs to be Catholic, because contraception violates the natural law. And it's arguably that most important linchpin that recreationalized sex. And yes, women need to be domestic. Only Catholics really insist on this, not Protestants or necessarily Orthodox, though oftentimes they're good on this. But we can't say this because all the world isn't Catholic. Well, this is why the world needs to be all Catholic.
And not only that, Tim, Elizabeth Anscombe, 20th century female British philosopher, Cambridge. People should go and read her essay on contraception and chastity. She makes the point that contraception within marriage is actually even worse than contraception outside it because it's a violation of a sacrament. And then you're into very controversial waters because there are some Catholics who kind of think it's okay to contracept in marriage.
What did St. Thomas Aquinas say about contraception? Will, we were talking about it before the show in our group.
Oh, he ranked it just below murder because one is the preventing of a human from being born, contraception, and then the other, murder, is the killing of a human who has already been born. So the two things were linked conceptually in the different ways of saying no to life, basically.
Yeah, and this is why I equate the red pill lifestyle. I mean, also, too, I guess, you know, this was this discussion I had the other night, where if you're using contraception, even within a heterosexual relationship, it's a homosexual activity, right? That's why, like, the red pill lifestyle is the gay cruiser lifestyle for straight people, right? And so, but just think about the message. Of course, that's not palatable. Of course, that's not going to be popular. Who wants to talk about that? But then on the flip side, okay, so if you were talking to me before, and I'm understanding it now more, you know, I was raised Catholic, you became Protestant, now I'm coming across the other side. What convinced me to start thinking about this more was the hard stance that the church has on contraception. But now, what do you guys say? And we don't have to spend a lot of time on this, to the people that are looking at us and say, well, you guys just think it's for procreation. God made it pleasurable. What's the rebuttal there, right? Because that was one of my hangouts before. Not to derail the point.
Tim, do you want to handle that?
Sure. Yeah, there are secondary ends. And I say to fitness people, I always say, look at the secondary pleasure delivery mechanism of the metabolism. The purpose everyone knows, particularly fit people, of the metabolic system and the GI, the human GI tract, it has a telos, an end, a goal, and that is nutrition. It's undoubtedly nutrition, but there are secondary ends, pleasure, food. Some foods release a lot of pleasure, the tasting and swallowing. Other foods do not. We like to eat those foods. They're the ones that make us fat. Well, a fit guy looks at a fat guy and goes, you're abusing your metabolic system, man. That thing is for delivering good nutrients to your muscles, not for just pleasure. You're putting the secondary end over the primary end with this human organ system. Well, we say that to a lot of the fit people who are running around fornicating as well. You have a reproductive system. It has as indisputable a teleology as the metabolic system has, doesn't it? It's for procreating. Indisputably, there's nothing academic about this. That's what the union of two human sex is for, male and female. It's for procreation. And yes, does it deliver secondary pleasure as a secondary end? Absolutely. Well, these perverts are sublimating the primary end for the secondary end. And guess what? When you listen to Aristotle talk about the virtue of temperance, he says it's in well-regulated, mediated touch, he means sex, and taste, he means don't be a glutton. So Aristotle puts these two things together exactly. I'm not just spitballing here. It's the subjugation of a primary end. There's only one, telos, for one of its secondary ends, which is pleasure.
And so another way that I reconcile this in my mind is, yes, it's pleasurable. And the reason and with that pleasure, there comes the other side of the coin. It's like, okay, well, you're going to be risking, let's say you guys are in your 40s and you're at risk of some kind of a complication in pregnancy. Well, that's exactly what you're risking with the being open to life and still wanting to enjoy sex. It's like you can't get something good without a potential for bad on the flip side. I don't know if that makes sense to you guys.
Yeah, it makes sense. And then the other point I would make is that guys like Rollo, who try to caricature Catholic teaching and say, oh, you're only allowed to have sex when you're trying to make a baby and that's it. That's not what the church even teaches. They just don't know what the actual doctrine is.
That's it, yeah.
And you can have sex with your wife when she's pregnant, when she's in her infertile phase over the month, because the point of the pleasure still is about bonding the spouses together for the benefit of the stability of the family and the children. So a lot of it is just wrong, and people just need to have the basics reiterated again and again, because 99.9% of this debate is just founded on misconceptions.
Yeah.
Partly that's because the church hasn't done a great job of making everything clear about this, because I think there's some pussyfooting there too. You don't often hear about it in homilies.
I just did a show on this yesterday. The Pontifical Academy for Life under Francis has become the Pontifical Academy for Death, and its president, PAVs, literally just 2 days ago said, well, we're going to reconsider artificial contraception under Francis, because even Pius XII updated and changed what Pius XI said about natural family planning. Total lie. And this just substantiates your point well, that the Catholics haven't even explained it well. Total lie. Well, actually, Pius XI and Pius XII were each equally clear, 12 quoted 11, that there is no violation of the natural law. as long as people have marital sex that's unitive and procreative, both of them express some concern. This is what we call NFP. Both of them express some concern if there's a married couple we could conceive hypothetically that uses NFP from the day they get married to the day they die and they never have a kid, even though technically there's no actus reus, there's nothing wrong they ever did. They probably have a mortally sinful attitude, which would be a separate sin besides contraception. And the PAV president, who is now seeking to justify maybe making a revolutionary turn that the leftists in the church have wanted to make over the last 100 years, actually enable condoms and such. He's saying, oh, well, Pius the 12th updated Pius the 11th. They don't even understand it, or probably worse yet, they're actually lying. So yeah, it's really fair to say that there's enough nuance here that the church needs to be articulating it better. And Mike, in response to your question on the back of Will's explanation of mine, I would say, of course, in the 40s, my wife has had nothing but C-sections. And there is an allowance for the secondary end of marital union to be the motivating factor as long as it never contradicts the primary end.
Right.
Condoms contradict the primary end, even if the real thing motivating you, which is why you can have sex with your wife on sterile days or semi-sterile days. And the church has become very explicit of that over the last 300 years, because that doesn't contradict it. If you actually ever put on a condom or use artificial contraception, that is the subversion of the first or by the second ends of it. So it's very technical stuff. The church should do a better job articulating this to people. We all agree there.
Tim, you were so right a few weeks ago when you said, man, you're entering the faith at such a funny time. Yes, like it's a very complicated and convoluted time to, you know, ponder on Catholicism when the church itself isn't very clear on these things. But this is why, you know, you guys are so necessary, dude, because that you guys were primarily where I went to sort of sort this stuff out. The church has got to do a better job. It's staggering. But anyways, I don't want to derail the point, but thank you guys for the clarity there.
Yeah, one thing, because I want to play you, finish the Daily Wire clips and then play you a clip. I was on OAN characterizing this red pill versus feminism debate. And one skill that podcasting doesn't sharpen, it actually dulls, because we're a very long format here, is the soundbite, the 30-second to 150-second soundbite that they want when they interview on news guests like us. That Will Noland is especially good at is just punchy. Man, that was a great 2-minute soundbite. And you always stay sharp, Will, because I'm like, okay, did I go too long? Is that 2 minutes? It's a different skill than the sitting here and doing a 60-minute podcast on something. I can, as Mike's saying, I can always sit there and listen to you guys. Listen to your own points out of the mouth of the other Catholic on Daily Wire, Matt Walsh, who makes Mike, your point here. I think this is it.
I've been in many occasions with Red Bull. I've run afoul of the Red Bull crowd many times, talked about these issues. And a question I've always had for them that they've never answered, and I'd love to hear an answer from any of them, is that, because you know, I agree with 95% of their criticisms, as you point out, the family courts and it's how it's stacked against men and so on and so forth. What's the other option? Like, okay, we agree with all that. So then men should just be alone and give up on their bloodline and die, and their bloodline is extinguished. Like what you are suggesting is despair. You are telling men that men are already feeling despair. They're feeling meaninglessness. They're feeling lost. They're feeling alone. They're feeling like everything's stacked against them. And so your answer to them is, yeah, well, just that's it. Be in despair and then die. And my point is that that's just not an okay answer. That can't be the answer.
And have lots and lots of sex. Well, that's the thing. That's
what I use. Next, someone actually makes the point. Spencer Clavin goes on about it's a despairing worldview, which is what much of the dissident right is now, and it's understandable. But I think it's Knowles pipes in and says, yeah, it's actually, he says something like the Skittles cruiser lifestyle, which is a Pantile point. And I'm like, maybe I haven't talked to Knowles directly in the last month, but Maybe he heard some Pantile making that exact point.
Did he make that point too?
Yes. Yes.
Amazing.
I mean, no, I mean, I've been telling people a long time, Knowles is the sharpest commentator that we have on the big stage. And he is just a shot of life. to listen to, and it's great, but it's also funny to hear your argument being made that way. He makes it in a second. I can't remember if let me play this Klavan. This is Andrew Klavan, who's a Protestant who doesn't like feminism, but you know how there are issues with Protestant points, obviously.
The politics of the right. This idea is basically it's all over. They think of people basically, Ben, like you and me, as sitting on an ice floe, kind of floating out as the ice, you know, melts away, because we're sitting around thinking about civil debate and, you know, constitutional governance, and they think that's all over now. And their despair is permeates the right. And I listen to a lot of these young guys, and they're talking about bringing back monarchy. They're talking about, you know, they're king. I know you love that.
They're laughing because Knowles has become a guy that'll stump for monarchy.
We had monarchy. It's not that great, you know. It actually isn't. You know, if you think our elections are bad, we need to see the beheadings. You know, because that's how most of the kings are.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
dude, that's fine.
I'm not saying we need an imam or a sheikh, you know, or like a sultan. I'm just, you know.
Am I missing this? What is the no marriage thing? I feel like I'm pretty in the.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no, it's a big.
Am I missing? Like, yeah. I feel like I've totally missed this.
Yeah, that's their whole position. They think that
marriage is. What men are anti-marriage?
Well, yeah, that's the point. They shouldn't be, you know, but it's
something. He's right. This is true.
All the guys that pop up on our Twitter feed.
I'm telling them. I'm actually listening. I'm adding up the marriage things. I'm very pro-marriage.
So this is Candace Owens saying, you know, oh, what is all this about? I guess she's going to have a talk with Pearly Things. I mean, do either of you just want to, I paused it again, opine really quickly on the solution to feminism being a couple chicks having a public talk? And how does this square at all with Christianity, scriptural patriarchy? I don't get it.
Well, it doesn't. This is why the way they're framing the debate is just feminist, like we said, which is let's get the women on, hear what they've got to say, or let's get the men and women just going at each other as if they're equals. You don't do that. There's an argument to say that the whatever podcast and this whole theming podcasting of just having men and women argue together, that is just a symptom of feminism.
It's soundbite culture too, right? I mean, that's the reason that podcast even really exists, if we're honest. Like, it's like 6 hours or 5 hours of just absolutely, it's absolute nonsense. Now, I tune in when Chase is on or when Knowles is on because they make some really, really good points. And, you know, yeah, hearing them talk is awesome. But it's just a bunch of, it's a gotcha bitch type of format, you know? And so yep, they splice these 30, 40, 90 second clips on Instagram and it goes viral. Like, at least, you know, with Fresh and Fit, you'd see a little bit more of a debate format, but it's not actual about the discourse. It's about clickbait. And that's why Candace and Pearl are having this discussion, because it's going to get views. It doesn't even fire a single shot into the actual battle itself. It's just, let's get these women talking about this thing. I don't know. It's useless, but I can see it from a pure financial business standpoint. Okay, that's a good idea. But it doesn't do anything. If anything, it waters down our message even more, because women are speaking on behalf of what should be male-focused issues, or at least male-led issues, because we know it's patriarchy, not matriarchy.
Yeah, and this is where the right says that the great hope to hail in terms of information transmission is the internet. Yeah, it's not regulable the same way that legacy media is, but everything has to be a soundbite. And so I lose hope quite fast.
Mm-hmm.
And before people jump on Candace Owens for the Steven Crowder and his wife thing, which was really, really bad. That was a train wreck to watch. I'll say, hey, I told Pearl this, I think publicly and privately, at least publicly. You shouldn't let a couple dudes handle it, right? You're the advocate for men. Let a couple of dudes handle these debates. And she's, you know what she responded on Twitter? She goes, don't hate me because you ain't me. I'm like, what does this mean? It's like saying it takes one to know one when you present a valid critique. I'm like, I thought you're the woman who wants men to be able to stand up for themselves to the gynocentric Leviathan. No, don't hate me because you ain't me. So people, you know, at least Candace Owens can say, hey, I kind of don't know what's going on. This isn't really my thing. I work for a mainstream organization that, you know, who probably 60% of their subscribers are boomers. This isn't really, I'm not up on this. I make content for my subscribers, and that's kind of what everyone does. Well, Pearl, she has a younger audience. She understands the red pill. She's the newest iteration of the red pill girl. It's really pathetic when they respond like that. Listen to what Owen says here.
that's why they should. But it's
he's right. That's just true.
All the guys that pop up on our Twitter feed.
But tell me that. I'm actually missing this. I didn't know the marriage thing. I'm very pro-marriage.
He didn't even know.
That argument. Yes. Okay. Argument, men should not get married.
Okay.
Is the institution.
Are men listening to that? Like, are men saying that men shouldn't get married, or is that a woman saying that a man shouldn't get married?
Well, Pearl, I think that there are examples of men saying it as well, but I think Pearl is sort of a prominent, one of the prominent voices. A lot of the.
But she's not married.
No.
Yeah. Okay. So then that I think that's first, that's a huge thing, right? I mean, obviously it's like listening to people that don't have kids tell you why you shouldn't have kids. Like it doesn't really work, right? Because when you're telling them about what changes inside of you when you get married, and I think it's very easy to gravitate towards that. That is a feminist message not to get married. And if her argument is, if you're pluralist with the courts, I could agree with you. Like, you know, the courts have done tons of things that are awful. And I don't even agree necessarily with the courts taking marriage at all. And it was a church thing and they took it. And this is how we ended up with gay marriage rights, which I'm very much opposed to.
Well, I'm going to say that a big part of the red pill thing that we would all probably agree with is they diagnose actual problems.
Right.
When Pearl or other people in the movement come along and say, this is a major problem in society.
Right.
I almost always agree with them. Yeah. That's when they get the prescription that I think that it falls apart. The prescription being, you know, lashing out at women generally or breaking despair or not. Yeah, kind of nihilism.
It's a feminist message. I mean, that is fundamentally to be anti-family. I don't understand how you could identify as a conservative at all, because everything that the left is trying to do, every Marxist principle, every feminist principle is about disrupting, you know, the family unit. It's what connects everything from the climate change lobby to don't have kids, the plant's going to die, to feminism, you know, be like men, we should be like men. It's all a disruption of the family unit. And if you are now arguing in favor of something that's fundamentally Marxist, then you have to examine whether or not you're conservative at all. That would be
my attack on that.
I haven't heard any men say that they're anti-feminist. Maybe I need to just.
No, I have.
I don't want to give them press because they're all jerks to me online. Okay. But there are a handful of these guys. And the irony of they put themselves out there to be these big, virile, you know, pinnacles of masculinity.
Their
anthropology is fundamentally, for lack of a better word, gay. Right. Their anthropology is fundamentally sterile. And it's saying, yeah, we shouldn't get married, we shouldn't have kids, we should just have sterile relations with random women. And so it's kind of how the irony that, you know, we end up at the topic that no one's allowed to name anymore that Matt made a movie about. And, you know, people say, well, that's so crazy, you know, we should dial that back. But that's just a consequence of the very same sexual revolution that has said for many decades now that men and women are exactly the same, which comes from feminism, right?
So horseshoe theory.
Totally, yeah. I mean, the logical conclusion of Gloria Steinem is these red pill bros, and they don't even realize.
Well, I'm radically pro-marriage.
So he made your point, Mike. It's funny to hear, right? I mean, because he just reasons really well, Michael Knowles.
No, he's in the know. I'm like, I wouldn't be, I mean, I don't know. Who knows if he's quoting me or not there, but his finger is on the pulse of this stuff on a deeper level compared to these other people, because he can have a deeper conversation about these issues. And man, that debate with him along by our side would have been absolutely epic, because I think he's probably, you know, the best out of the Daily Wire crew. I can also, yeah, for sure. And I can also see and understand your frustration when it's like 99% of the point, but they're missing like the key 1%.
And that's, yeah, 1%. With Knowles, I don't think it's intentional. I mean, just like half the time when you guys hear me talk, when someone's a bro, like Knowles is a bro, when you guys hear me talk, you'll be like, oh, yeah, that's 99% what I want to say. I'll add something. And always what you will or Mike or Nick or when it was Michael Robillard or Elliot. When they would add something, I'd be like, yeah, you could basically speak for me. I just didn't think to make that. It's a legitimate oversight on my point, or my synapses just hadn't connected that way yet, mm-hmm. right? That's what it is with Knowles. He's just making great points, making connections in real time. That's how dialogue works out of the Western tradition, Plato and Aristotle and Socrates and the Greek Agora. So he's not holding back. And also, he'll quote my books chapter and verse, and I'm like, that's awesome. Also, I did put out your Pantile quote about the tangerine cruiser lifestyle, let's say, on Twitter, and so I think that's how he would have heard it, and he made this connection because it's real and it's amazing. It's funny. On the other hand, most of the other guys won't think a thought through all the way to its rational conclusion, or will contradict themselves. Like you heard Jeremy Boring there say, you know, we agree almost all with their diagnosis of the maladies. It's the remedies that are wrong. But then he keeps saying, well, I don't want to lash out at women. No, that's part of the malady diagnosis that the red pill, I think, gets right. What do you say, Will?
Yeah, I think he's mostly right. I have heard Noel say a couple of times, though, that the red pill says men and women are basically the same. And that's what makes it feminist, which the red pill doesn't say. So he somehow got the wrong impression of it there. But yeah, I agree, Tim. Most of what he's saying, I would say, go ahead, add a couple of tweaks here and there, and I'd be happy for him to speak to me, speak for me, sorry. There's just a few qualifications that I would make.
Okay, so censorship is a real thing. You and I know this well. Both of us were fired from teaching positions because they couldn't censor us in the classroom. We didn't allow ourselves to be censored. So ask for forgiveness, not permission, and forgiveness shall not be granted. to truthsayers. So you and I have walked this walk. I've had my Patreon removed. Mike, you know what's up. But you don't expect it when you go on these right-wing outfits. So that was the Daily Wire. They had a pretty good conversation. I'd say because of you know, 90% of the goodness comes from Knowles and the other 9% of the goodness comes from Walsh, the two Catholics who are the only guys that can really fully, full-throatedly intone anything approaching the things we've been saying. But I, on Valentine's Day, went on OANN. And there's a couple, I mean, I'll just be making my points, so I'm playing myself, but I went on to this guy, Chris Boyle's show, good dude, very likable young man with a cool show. And it's One America News, which is supposed to be, you know, as far right as you can go and still be mainstream. But there's a funny moment where I say fully demographically, ideologically in the Providence, what's wrong with the red pill. And he thinks he's muted and he's, I think, talking to his producer. And listen to what he says, okay? I mean, I can't not play this since we're talking about red pill versus feminism in the news.
It seems like there's kind of two motivations that at least I've been able to identify. Maybe you think I'm right, maybe you think I'm wrong. One of those is based on the idea that, number one, they just want to engage in licentiousness themselves. They just want to go out and have a really good time and be basically like a slutty dude and say, well, the women are doing this, so I want to get away with it themselves. Which is obviously not really a rightly motivated perspective, right? These are dudes who are just kind of scumbags and trying to masquerade under the guise of philosophy. That's just my take. But the second, I think the guys who really need to be addressed a little more and need a little more speaking to are the guys who really would like to engage in marriage, who really would like to raise a family, but see the institution of marriage is so shattered that they don't think that they could possibly engage in it. Now, what I want to ask is, number one, if you think I'm right, but number two, if you agree with my theory that a lot of this is because these guys don't feel confident enough in their ability to adequately lead a family, to lead a woman no more, and she won't split when, I don't know,
certainly. With regard to number one, they just say enjoy the decline, the influencers that are on top of the red pill. Not Christian, they're decidedly anti-Christian. They actually turn out to be Jewish and Muslim in almost every case, Jewish and or Muslim. But in the second case, in terms of the consumer listenership of the red pill, you're absolutely right. Look, in the middle 1800s, all three branches of Christianity were stormed secretly by feminism, Chris. 200 years later, disenchanted, disaffected, apostatized white Christian men who informed the audiences of these red pill influencers and who left the faith by design, the feminist infiltration of the faith 200 years ago, have turned to a worldwide movement, particularly in the Anglosphere, called the red pill, which tells them these conspicuous points. Listen up. Christianity is cooked. There's no such thing as patriarchy, which means power to fathers, even though these things work. Number two, feminism is here to stay. Literally, there's a guy called Myron Gaines, who's one of these big influencers, who tweeted this about 3 weeks ago. Feminism is here to stay. Adapt to it. That means enjoy the decline. Use promiscuity to your advantage. It's a very common theme. Thirdly, adapt by using a weird combo of the Talmud and the Quran.
Listen to what he says.
These Christian males, they're really just...
I don't think that came through the mic, but
did it not?
You didn't hear it. He says it low. He goes, "Yeah, we're not going to run that." Yeah, we're not going to run that. I'm like, wait, what? Wait. This is One American News. I can't say that dudes should be Christian. Here, let me try to see if you can hear it.
Did I?
I don't know if I caught it there. I caught that tail end of it, but yeah, that's wow.
So we can't even diagnose that there are on it's secular news, but secular news that makes all of its hosts are Christians. Almost all of them are Catholic at OAN, and they always cover Christianity with a positive spin. That's great. But you can't even say, look, the solution is uniquely Christian. Even the other Western religions, they have divorce. They have all of the issues that seem to be informing the red pill. You say that and they're treating you like I'm not a white nationalist. I'm just mentioning white Christian guys can have their problems before, during, and after marriage and divorce reconciled by returning to the faith of their fathers. And he goes, yeah, we're not going to run that.
Well, because you mentioned the Talmud in the Quran, bro.
Right. And they're like, no, those you can dump on the Quran, but not the Talmud.
No. Exactly. Dude. And even the Quran, like how dare you talk about, you know, Muhammad and the Quran. And but then you lumped them together with, you know, the Talmud and you mentioned Jews. It's game over. But they ended up they ended up running it, though, right?
Yeah, it got run. He's like, yeah, we're not going to run that. And then they I don't know how to interpret this stuff on far right wing news. You say stuff in a nuanced way. You try to anyway. And you're still hearing feedback like, we're not going to run that. Just can the truth be said?
Unpopular. It's unpopular, dude. And that's why I think you're very deserving of 1 million subscribers plus. But you're at 50,000 because you talk about, and 50,000 is a great number too, by the way. I'm not looking down on it. But you're speaking about these truths, and you've been doing it for a while. And there's a reason why our platforms have grown a little bit more slowly. A lot of people don't want to hear it, but it's needed. That's why I'm not too discouraged. I'm encouraged by this. We just got to keep them on their heels. Sorry, Will, you were going to say something.
No, I was just going to say that Paul Gottfried of Chronicles Magazine, I interviewed him a while back talking about his experience coming up as a young, very right-wing academic and the experience of being canceled and deplatformed that he had. And he made the great point that you get worse censorship on the right than you do on the left. Absolutely. So these guys will punch right harder than they will punch left. And Tim's just given a lot of examples of exactly that fact that Gottfried was pointing out as well. They get very defensive and touchy about the things that they know they have to tread carefully around, normally because they're just spineless and money is on the line. And that's their bottom line.
Is that it? Is that the why? That's the only one that makes sense with right who believe. Is that it?
You think when you're talking about big business and when you're thinking about who's even allowed to attend these debates and how they can maximize revenue and clicks and all the rest of it and get the biggest names involved, I think it's mainly money.
Oh, dude, it has to be. I mean, you talk about the Daily Wire. They leave that 2% out, right, for a reason. Because their audience are boomers, and there's millions upon millions of dollars on the line. Of course they're not going to talk about that stuff. They maybe started with good intentions, but then it kind of gets watered down as they grow and they become beholden to the audience.
Yeah, and contrast that to Christ when he was at the height of his popularity and multitudes follow him, and then he just doesn't hold back and says the stuff that makes them turn away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well said.
Specifically, the discourse on the bread of life is where it made so many turn away, right? John 6 is like verse 50 to 70-ish, the bread of life discourse. You actually have to eat my body, and then the multitudes turn away. And then it does say there, people don't talk about this enough, Judas shortly went off and sold his soul and his friend Jesus to the Pharisees after that. It's the last line in that section. So yeah, if Jesus would have just shaven off that last little bit, the Eucharist, that last 1%, he could have had 2,000 more followers. Well, go from town to town, bring the truth, bring it to everyone. Don't pare it down at all. Kick the dust from your sandals. You guys, parish orphans and retrogrades out there, you're going to be hearing on my 50,000 show a little more substantiation why I'm talking this way. We were very, very, very close, or at least it was very close to working a deal where in the marquee lights, the case for patriarchy could have been highlighted on the biggest stage. There's still some iteration happening, but it's funny that last 1 or 2% get in the way. And if you don't compromise the way I don't, Will doesn't, Mike doesn't, Nick doesn't, then it's like, that's fine. Then it'll be on a slightly smaller stage, but it's still going to be a big stage. What do you guys think of this? I think there's an almost linear correlation. The worse things get, the worse society becomes, the more truth we're allowed to say. That 98th percentile, we've been allowed to say the last year or two. The 99th percentile, if things get really bad and hairy in 2024, we'll be allowed to say. If things get nasty, maybe all 100%, the full Monty. What do you say, Will?
Could well be. It does seem like the Overton window is shifting. So hopefully it will continue to shift to the right. And then the movement we've seen towards catching up with the case for patriarchy will eventually mean that the whole thing is made. I don't know whether that will actually happen or not, but it would be nice if it did. If it doesn't, fine, because it's better just to help a handful of marriages with the whole truth than to have a really big platform with a watered down version of it and end up misleading many, many people with that watered down message. So even if only one couple had read The Case for Patriarchy and Ask Your Husband Tim, and that really brings their marriage to, you know, full thriving patriarchal hierarchy, that's better than having a million followers on YouTube or X or whatever and giving people bullshit.
You know,
I fully agree with that. Yeah. I fully agree with that. And I think the pendulum is swinging really harsh in the other direction, because we've had so many years of woke bullshit and nonsense that people are starting to wake up. People are starting to come to the faith in droves. Churches are packed. Tons of people at mass, tons of people at church, because our people are searching, right? Even women that have been fooled by feminism are reaching their later 20s and 30s and 40s saying, yeah, I was fooled. So this is becoming the popular message. And it's only a matter of time until that last 2%, they come all the way to the other direction. And I think it's going to swing hard in the other direction. And that is when our specific platforms are going to shine. But again, to Will's point, I don't think it matters if it does or it doesn't, because we're all doing a good work individually with our individual businesses, Will and I, with our coaching and the men's work that we're doing, impacting marriages and individuals in the faith on a deep and profound level, bringing them to the faith and deepening their faiths. And the same thing for you, Tim, with your show and with your book and everything that you got going on. We're doing our part. And so I don't care if our platforms stay small, because I think we're doing an amazing work with our own families and our communities as a whole, and being good stewards of our audiences, knowing that we're never going to be spiritually gay for pay. That's what it is. Yeah,
that's it. Exactly it, Mike. Spiritually gay for pay. And remember, Judas didn't even want his money in the end.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so true. Yeah, I've never given a damn about the money. You get into teaching and you're a guy that's gifted with liberality in the Aristotelian sense. I don't care about the money. Easy come, easy go. But I'll be careful. I'll watch my words carefully. But working with a lot of Catholics, which I have in the past, I work with fewer Catholics now that you guys are both Catholic. Nick's a Catholic, but I work in a different capacity with Catholics, guys that are kind of doing the work first. I've never seen more of a stumbling block than the, I want to grow my platform in order to bring the gospel to more people, which always, when I hear someone intone that, always causes them to think, to sell short, to break faith. So you have to avoid that. It's more, growing the platform is more tempting to me than making a bunch of money. But I've seen enough guys provide a cautionary example. Lots of the big Catholics. Well, if we grow it, then they, it's not, if we speak the truth, they will come, like the Kevin Costner from Field of Dreams. It's the other. We'll forestall the truth a little bit, grow the platform, then we'll tell the truth. And then we'll be able to bring the gospel, the real full gospel. I'm like, no, you can't do that. Even though to me, that's more tempting to do than the money. Neither of them are tempting in the long run.
Yeah, it's the ears itching and burning for the false doctrine. And that's the way to get the clicks. That's the way to get the followers up as well. I love that. Spiritually gay for pay, Mike. That's what it's about. I've got a lesson coming up, guys. I got to go, but good to speak to you. Looking forward to next week.
You as well, Will. Take care, buddy.
Take care.
You too, Will. So, well, Mike, I'll give you a parting shot there. I feel like we've been banging a drum And I make no apology for banging this drum. Like the stuff we've been talking about in the background has been vaulted into the limelight. And by and large, in ways we've mentioned here today, it's not getting talked about the right way. So it only makes sense to me to grab clips and be like, well, this is good, this is bad. What do you say?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And that's why, you know, honestly, I'm not too concerned that we're not in the debate just yet, because it's clear that the message is getting heard. And I think that's what matters more than anything. It's like I understand, and we were talking about, you know, growing our platforms. It's important to be tactful, right, in growing, and that so you don't get deplatformed. Not to say that you ever water down the truth, because that's why I think my platforms have grown more slowly, because I'm not afraid to come out with a whip, understanding sort of like which platform I'm on. You know, with X, you can be a little bit more like swing from the hip, and then on Instagram, you've got to do it in a certain way. Honestly, I've got, and I know you do, and Will and Nick, same thing too, is I've got so much faith in the Lord that this fight, we're going to be in this fight, okay? And I understand that there is going to come a time, whether it's this debate or something down the line, where we're going to be thrust into this position to defend the ultimate position, which is patriarchy and its truth that comes from the Bible and Christianity. And all I'm concerned about is a continual full court press, 10 toes down, in the battle, continuing the fight, no matter if people are hearing it or not, because it's only a matter of time until they do, right? And I'm not going to water down the truth so I end up on Daily Wire, or so I end up on one of these platforms on the whatever or whatever. If it happens and the Lord is willing, the creek don't rise, sure, I'm going to go fight that fight there. I just think we've got to stay focused on what we're doing and just continue in perpetuity. That's it. I know it sounds cliche. I'm not going to lose much sleep over this debate. I just know we're spreading the right message, and eventually people are going to hear, because they have to have ears to hear and eyes to see. A lot of people's hearts have been hardened by pride, or by, you know, being at the behest of money or beholden to money and their audiences. But eventually we're going to crack through to those people. It's just a matter of time.
Mike, of course I know, but share, since we're on not the CMask platform today, and we'll probably copy it over there, you're on Timothy Gordon Rules for Retrogrades. Tell people where they can find you on Twitter. And it's not like you're an every Friday guest, but, and tell them what you're working on your own there.
Absolutely. I appreciate that, man. So it's just my name, Mike Pantile. You can find me on Instagram, YouTube. I've taken a short hiatus, but I'm on there as well as on X, Twitter, even calling it X. I vow to never call it, but here I am doing it for the first time. On Twitter, Mike Pantile, same thing. I do, obviously, the CMask show, which is an honor. And I also run a podcast with my good friend Brendan, the Masculine Revival Podcast, that logo right there. So if you guys want to tune in with that as well. I also do men's work. And so if people, you know, need help with their marriages or individually as Christians, I do run a coaching business as well. So you can just go to MikePantile.com, fill out an application. You can book a free intro call. I can see how I can help you. It's mainly around getting guys to have more sex in their marriages, leading their marriages better, helping men through the courtship process, and helping men deepen their faith and overcome lust and sort of the spoils of the flesh. So that's what I'm working on right now. There's more stuff in the works, but that's what's going on at the moment.
From my end, Parish Reverends and Retrogrades, you're going to see exactly what's been in the works. It's big. I've insinuated it some today, and you're going to see how big. If we get to this 50,000 sub show, which has taken like 3 weeks, like this video, subscribe, click the notification bell. If you want to support Rules for Retrogrades, Locals and Subscribestar are the way to do it. Because, of course, there's no compromise with the truth. And Patreon came to a point at the beginning of 2023 where they said, take this down or we're going to take your money from you, freeze your account. Well, there's no choice for me. For me, there is no choice. You can never capitulate in those situations. And so Locals and Subscribestar, the way to do it. Do you do crowdfunding, Mike?
I don't. I'm really behind on all of this stuff. I probably should. I was actually thinking about doing a weekly show on YouTube as well.
You should do a weekly show on your YouTube channel with a Locals and or Subscribestar. It's worked out so far. No threats in a year. There'd been a lot of saber rattling on by Patreon before they eventually took me down. So I recommend that to anyone and everyone, but especially you, Mike. I know what Will does. God bless you all. You're going to find out real soon. The 50,000 subscriber show will involve a call-in studio with instructions. You can actually call in and talk to me. We got this hotline ready over the last 3 weeks when we were anticipating doing the 50,000 sub show any day. It's going to involve two big revelations. Going to have a bunch of call-in guests. Hopefully, Mike, you will be one of the call-in guests. Going to have lots of friends of the show. I think Knowles is going to call into the show. You have friends like Royce White and Jesse and Terry. And, of course, in his time across the pond, Will, Nick. Nick might be in studio with me, Mike. And other friends of the show. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Well, there's no real plan aside from the reveals that I have. So help us cross 50,000 subs. We're like 30 people away. And it's funny because people are jumping off board. What a world. God bless you all. God bless you, Mike.
God bless you, buddy. Christ is Lord.
Christ is King. Happy Friday, all. Deus vult.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.